Welcome to Tuned To Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, True History. We hear the signing of the Magna Carta on You Are There, coming up later in the hour. Right now, it's the Frontline Theater with the story The Good Old Days, which tells the tale of Stephen Brody, who jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge and survived. Brian Dunleavy stars in this 1940s broadcast from Armed Forces Radio.
It's the Frontline Theater. Frontline Theater presents a story based on the life of one of America's most colorful characters, Steve Brody. The Good Old Days, starring Brian Dunleavy. Our production also calls for the incidental music of Joe Reichman and his orchestra. A hearty welcome to Frontline Theater, men. This is your theater, and every performance is presented especially for you, the men and women of the United Nations. But before we get into tonight's play, The Good Old Days, here's Joe Reichman and his orchestra with a musical curtain raiser.
Listen to my baby ballin', drip, drop, drip, drop. Listen to the tears a-fallin', drip, drop, drip, drop. If she don't get whatever she wants, the tears roll down. One more hour of the shower, get out the boats or we'll all drown. Listen to my baby weepin', drip, drop, drip, drop. Made a promise I ain't keepin', drip, drop.
The curtain rises on Act One of The Good Old Days, starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Brody. Take a chance, Steve Brody did. Yes, ever since Steve Brody's famous leap from the Brooklyn Bridge, those famous words have been the alibi for two generations of reckless schemes. But why did Steve do it? Well, it all started one night at Mulligan's Bar, where Daisy, his girlfriend, was singing. Steve had bought an engagement ring for Daisy, not a very big one, but one he'd been saving up for months for. He was just like a big kid.
Hello, Steve. What brings you over to Mulligan's?
Well, I got something to talk to you about, Daisy. Let's get away from this noise, huh?
Well, sure. We can talk in the back room. Come on.
Yeah.
In here, Steve.
Daisy, you look great. Got a new dress, huh?
Uh-huh. You like it?
I sure do. It's almost as blue as your eyes.
Same old Steve. Same old Blarney.
Daisy, look, I bought...
Steve, you should have seen the party John L. Sullivan had here last night. A crowd of uptown swells.
John L., that big hunk of beefsteak brings Mulligan all his business. Well, Daisy, what I wanted to say was...
I bet I sang after the ball 10 times. And, Steve, take a look at this ring.
Daisy, is that rock a real diamond?
It sure is. Diamond Jim Brady gave it to me for a tip.
Oh, he did. Mr. Brady is sure free with his sparklers, ain't he?
Well, what are you getting sore about?
Oh, nothing. Only that rock would make any other guy's ring look sick, wouldn't it?
Steve, did you buy me a ring?
Hmm? What gave you that idea? I ain't a good time, Charlie.
Oh. Well, what'd you want to tell me?
Huh? Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. Oh. John L. Sullivan's here again.
Sure, he's always here.
Mulligan, I can lick any man in the world.
Yes, sir?
Yeah, he makes me sick, that big windbag.
You wouldn't dare call him that to his face.
Oh, wouldn't. I ain't afraid of that big loud mouth.
Oh, Steve, come back here.
John, so you let him have it,
yes,
huh?
Yes, sir, Mulligan. It was in the 6th round. Bare knuckle fight, of course. So I says to my opponent, I says, you've gone far enough. So I uncorks the right. Well, hello, Brody.
Oh, hello, John L. The big hunk of beefsteak himself, huh?
Well, if it isn't my friendly competitor, can I treat you to a drink?
No, thank you, Mulligan. I do my drinking in my own joint. I know what I'm getting there.
Now, that's no way to talk, Brody. I'm sure Mr. Mulligan has nothing against a small businessman like yourself.
Small businessman? Listen, Sullivan, someday Steve Brody's saloon is going to be the place on the Bowery.
Now, Steve, don't start anything.
All right, go ahead, laugh. But I won't need any big windbag hanging around to put my joint over.
Steve.
And who would you be referring to as a windbag?
Well, I could be referring to you, Mr. Sullivan.
Oh, yes?
But I ain't.
Well, it's lucky that you ain't, because John L. can tear you apart with his bare hands.
Right, Mulligan.
Yes, sir.
I can lick any man in the world.
Yeah, right, I know. I read all about that in the Police Gazette. Listen, Sullivan, going around knocking guys down with your fist don't get you no place. Not if you want to be a big guy.
Why, John L.'s the biggest guy in this town. 210 pounds of bone and muscle.
I mean big like President Garfield. You think he went around knocking guys down to get in the White House? He used his brain. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, you're going to be president. Brody for president.
So you're going to be a big guy, huh?
Yeah. I'll have bigger diamonds than Jim Brady. All right. I'll have more stocks than Charlie Schwab. And I'll have more furs and real estate and houses and horses than Mr. Rascal. Wait a minute. You get this, Sullivan. One of these days, I'm going to make joints like Mulligan's here look sick.
Well, I wish you luck, Steve. I expect to see your business thriving when I get back.
Oh, yeah? Where are you going, Mr. Sullivan?
Me? Oh, I'm going to San Francisco, California, to knock out Paddy Ryan. Why, ain't you heard about the fight?
Yeah, I heard about the fight, but I ain't heard how you're going to knock out Paddy Ryan.
Brody, if I didn't know you had the wild imagination of a crazy Irishman, I'd knock you out.
Yes, he would.
Oh, don't pay any attention to Steve, Mr. Sullivan.
Why, everybody knows John L.'s going to win. Mr. Richard K. Fox of the Police Gazette is even installing a ticker tape in here the night of the fight.
A ticker tape in here? What for?
So my customers can get the fight results right from the ring in San Francisco.
Oh. Well, you're going to look awful sad, Mulligan, when you read the results to your customers.
You want to make any bets on that, Brody?
Sure. I got a pocket full of Paddy Ryan dough, and it says that John L. is going to get knocked out.
I'll take your dough, Brody.
Steve, wait a minute. What do you do if John L. wins?
Don't you worry, Daisy. I'll take a chance.
Quiet, everybody, if you want to hear about the big fight. Anybody seen Steve Brody?
Yeah, I'm here, Mulligan.
Well, the results of the John L. Sullivan and Paddy Ryan fight are coming in on the ticker.
All right, read it to us, will you, Mulligan?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased to announce that John L. Sullivan just knocked out Paddy Ryan in the second round. Silver champion! Everybody to the bar! Drinks on the house!
Thanks, Brody. That was the quickest $50 I ever picked up.
Now, shut up, Mulligan.
What a sucker.
Hey, Steve, I told you not to bet all that money.
Nobby, so help me. One crack out of you, and I'll let you have it.
Nah, don't get sore, Steve.
Look, Nobby, you're my bartender, not my nursemaid.
Oh, you know I'm your pal. Gee, what are you going to do?
Oh, Oh, honest, Nobby, I don't know. That big bum, Paddy Ryan. Nobby, I got to get $100 and right away, too.
You got as much chance of getting $100 around here as jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, I don't know. There must be some way that we could... Hey, wait a minute. Nobby, say that again.
What, Steve? Say what again?
About the bridge, the Brooklyn... About the bridge.
Now, wait a minute. It ain't that bad.
Huh?
You ain't going to commit suicide.
Yeah. Listen, Nobby, I'm the best diver in the world. You know that. I can even dive off the Brooklyn Bridge if I want to.
Steve, listen.
Who's going to dive off the Brooklyn Bridge?
I am, Mr. Mulligan.
Oh, you are. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish to announce that our good friend Steve Brody is going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge.
And he can do it.
And furthermore, I'm taking any and all bets.
Oh, Steve, I hope you know what you're doing.
Sure, I know what I'm doing, Daisy. I'm going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Steve, just look at that bridge up there. How high it is.
All right, Nobby, so it's high. You think I was going to get killed or something?
There's worse things than being killed. You could be permanently injured.
Oof. Look at that crowd up there, though, Nobby. I can't back out now. Listen, all you got to worry about is keeping this rowboat close by so that you can pick me up out of the water.
Okay, Steve, I'll be waiting for you.
Yeah, well, I'll get out and go on up. I'll see you later.
Don't worry.
Mr. Sheridan, I say that Steve Brody will never have the nerve to jump off this bridge.
You got a bet, Mr. Mulligan.
Well, it's nice to see I got such a big reception.
Brody, it's going to be a wonderful feeling you'll have, standing out there in that girder, all alone on the very top of the bridge, looking down for miles and miles with nothing under you but the cool green water itself. I wonder what you'll be thinking.
I'll be thinking, Mulligan, how I'm going to win enough dough to put joints like yours out of business.
Jumping off this bridge, take a care, Brody. You don't put your own joints out of business.
Steve, you can't do this. You'll get killed. What do you care what this bunch of hoodlums think? You can't do this crazy thing.
Listen, Daisy, I'm going to jump. And I'm going to jump now. All right, stand back, you guys. You'll get drowned by the splash.
Oh, you're all murderers. That's what you are. Steve is committing suicide.
Well, he said he'd jump off the bridge. It was the last act of his life, and it probably will be.
Yeah, look at him. He's crawling out there on the girder.
Oh, he's getting on his feet. He's going to fall. No, he's steady now.
Hey, is this bridge shaking, or is it just broad his knees?
Look at him out there posing.
Hey,
he's getting ready.
And there he goes. Come up, he'd be up by now.
It's getting so dark we can hardly see.
I don't see him.
Oh, Steve's been drowned. I know it.
Hey, there's Nobby and that boat coming in.
Sure, not Steve with him.
Good night, Steve. Good
night,
Steve.
Good night, Steve. Good night,
Steve. Good
Hey, somebody grab a hold of the boat.
I get it, Nobby. I get it.
You see, Daisy, just like I said, nothing to it.
Oh, Steve.
Look out, Daisy. You'll get all wet.
I don't care. Oh, Steve, you were wonderful. Wasn't he, Mr. Mulligan?
Yeah, sure he was. We all knew you'd do it, Steve.
All right, one side, all of you.
Hold it, Jim. Gallagher's a cop.
Hey, what's going on here?
Oh, didn't you hear, Gallagher? I just jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Really, Brody? So you did it.
Oh, I did it. What do you think of that, Gallagher?
Well, Steve, I think you're a public nuisance and I'm arresting you for disturbing the peace.
That was Act One of The Good Old Days, starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Brody.
Read all about it! Steve Brody jumped off Brooklyn Bridge! Read all about it!
Hey, Joe. What? Joe, did you read this? Fella jumped off Brooklyn Bridge.
Poor guy was killed, huh?
No, hit the water without a scratch.
Yes, by the time Steve Brody had succeeded in bellowing his way out of jail, all New York had heard about his celebrated jump from the Brooklyn Bridge. For the first time in the history of Steve's saloon, it's jammed to the rafters with cash customers, and Steve is the man of the hour.
Hey, Daisy. I told you I'd put this joint over. But now, there's a little matter that you and me got to take up.
Oh, like what, for instance?
Well, like when you and me are going to get hitched.
And who says I'm going to marry you?
I do.
Well, that's different.
Give it. You mean you will?
Sure, I will, Steve.
Oh. Well, seeing as how we're engaged, what about a kiss?
Steve.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh,
listen, brother. Can't you see that we're busy? What's the idea of busting in here like that?
Oh, I'm very sorry. You see, my name is Charles Hoyt.
Oh, the theatrical producer.
Yes.
Oh, well, how do you do, Mr. Welcome to Steve Brody's. Can I buy you a drink?
No, thank you. I came to see you on a matter of business.
Huh?
You see, I'm producing a new show, A Trip to Chinatown.
Oh, I read about it in the paper, Mr. Hoyt.
And naturally, I'm lining up talent for it.
Well, will you be wanting a singer?
Yes, indeed.
Well, Mr. Hoyt, you won't find a better voice anywhere in the Bowery than Daisy O'Toole.
I'm sure of that, but...
Steve, I wouldn't leave you now.
Now, listen, Daisy, I ain't going to stand in your way.
I'm afraid you don't quite understand. You see, Mr. Brody, I'm intrigued with the amount of publicity you've received. So I figured that it would be a great idea to put you into my new show.
Me? But...
Certainly. Why, all New York will want to see Steve Brody.
Well, Mr. Hoyt, I ain't no actor.
Mr. Brody, if you could take a chance off that bridge, I can take a chance on you. Now, be at my office tomorrow morning, and we'll arrange the details.
But I...
I'm glad to have met you, Miss O'Toole. I'll expect you around 11, Steve.
Well,
goodbye.
Gee, where's...
Funny. We were thinking it was me.
Me? An actor. Well, what do you know?
Oh, it's crazy. Well, you're not an actor.
Oh, I don't know. Wait a minute. I made it off the bridge, didn't I? Thought I could make it on the stage. You know, I used to recite a little back in the Ninth Street School. Beneath the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands.
Oh, Steve, please.
Imagine me, Steve Brody, up there on the stage in front of the footlights with all the... The smith, a mighty man was he with large and sinewy hands.
Jack, there are the flowers from Mr. Brody's table.
Ah, oui. Henri, you know, in all my years at the Vanderbilt Hotel, I have never seen such a floral decoration.
That bridge jumper.
Oh, tiens, the barry invading society.
Jack, here he comes.
Uh-oh.
Well, hello there, Jockey. How's the boy?
Oh, very well, monsieur.
Now, give that champagne an extra twirl tonight, Jackie. It's got to be good and cold, you know.
Oh, it will be, Monsieur Brody.
And keep it coming fast. I got a lot of high-class ladies and gentlemen joining me.
Yes, sir, Jim. In the third round, I uncork the right that lands Paddy Ryan on the canvas. And then, oh, Steve Brody. Well, how are you?
Hello, John L. What's this joint coming to, letting box fighters in?
You know my pal, Diamond Jim Brady.
Yeah, sure. Hello.
Hello. I saw you in the show, Steve, and you were very good.
Throwing another party, Steve?
Sure, why not?
Hey, Jim, you better watch out. Pretty soon this guy will be stealing your stuff, lighting cigars with $10 bills.
You should talk, Sullivan, the way you throw your dough around.
Well, with me, it's different. I can lick any man in the world, and I'll never run out of challengers. But what are you going to do when you run out of bridges?
Well, I got other ways of making money. I'm entering a horse at Saratoga.
You bought a horse, Brody?
Mm-hmm.
You don't care how you spend your dough.
Well, dough's to spend. You only live once, and brother, I'm living now. Hey, Jockey, bring my pals here some champagne.
Nobby, I'm worried about Steve.
Huh?
It's been 6 months since we've seen him.
Ah, he's just busy with his swell uptown friends. Ah, but he's spending his money like a crazy loon.
Oh, well, you know how Steve is, Nobby. Sort of like a kid at a party. Always bragging and showing off, but he don't mean it.
Yeah, sure. Don't worry, he'll be around one of these days.
Nobby, I might as well tell you. Steve moved out of that swell hotel.
How do you know?
I was there yesterday. And they acted kind of funny. Like he owed them money.
Well, gee, Daisy, didn't they know where he went?
No. Oh, Nobby, Steve needs us now. I know he does.
Nah, don't worry, kid. Don't worry. I'll look for him.
Wherever he is, you gotta find him and bring him back. Oh, please, Nobby, please.
Hey, mister, tell me something. Have you seen Steve Brody?
Why, no, he hasn't been here for weeks, sir. Try Rector's.
Last time I saw Steve Brody, he was walking back from Saratoga.
Address? All he left here were a couple of bum checks.
Hey, you, have you seen Steve Brody?
Brody? Yeah, I seen him this morning.
Huh? Where'd he go?
I don't know. He beat it.
Look, listen, I gotta find him.
Yeah, well, why don't you try the bridge? From the looks of him, he was heading for the river.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Nobby.
Well, it's funny me meeting you here on the bridge, ain't it, Steve?
What's funny about it? Go away, will you? I got stuff on my mind.
Yeah? What kind of stuff brings you out on a bridge in the middle of a foggy night? You're not planning another leap off the old bridge, are you?
Well, what if I am?
Well, if you are, you're not worth all the trouble you caused me and Daisy.
Daisy? What's she got to do with it?
Who do you suppose has been sticking around the joint to keep it alive?
Joint?
She's got everything to do with it, that's what.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear your joint is still operating, Nobby.
That ain't my joint, Steve. I never signed no papers when you give it to me.
Well, it sure is anyhow. I'm not the kind of a guy that turns back, Nobby.
Oh, you ain't turning back, Steve, because you ain't never been away. That wasn't you up at the Vanderbilt. You've been down here with us all the time.
Ah, you're having a pipe dream, Nobby. Go away, will you?
Listen, Steve. I'm giving you one more chance. Are you coming with me?
Wait a minute. Who's giving who one more what? Listen, Nobby. What makes you think that you can threaten me?
I'll show you what. This. Steve. Hey, Steve, I didn't mean... I was just gonna... Steve. Steve, say something to your old pal. Speak to me.
What? Why, you lousy, no-good bum.
Well, Steve, there it is. Same old swinging door.
Yeah. And the same old sign. Steve Brody's Saloon. It sure looks good to me, Nobby.
Well, go on in.
Go on in.
It's still your joint.
Okay.
Hey, guys, look who's here!
Gee, we're Pete's. The same old gang. Clancy?
Well, how are you, Steve? Glad you're back.
Shaughnessy?
Hello, Steve.
Gee, it's swell of you guys.
Hi, Steve.
Good to have you back.
Well, John L., how are you, bum?
Well, hello, Steve. Hey, did you hear the news?
Huh?
I've signed to meet Jake Kilrain in New Orleans, and I'll slug him out in one round.
Yeah? Well, I'm laying 8-5 on Jake.
Well, welcome home, Steve. It's been no fun without you.
Oh, Mulligan.
Yeah, Mulligan.
Oh, you mean no competition, huh?
Well,
I... Oh. Daisy.
Steve.
Come on, Daisy. Let's you and me get out of here, huh? Daisy, I missed you so much.
Well, I've missed you too, Steve.
I sure made a dunce of myself, didn't I?
Oh, forget it. Say, Steve.
Yeah?
Remember that night, you know, when Mr. Hoyt came in here?
Sure, I remember.
Well, well, we were talking about getting hitched.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, what of it?
Well, I'm still waiting, Steve.
Oh, stop it, will you, Daisy?
You mean you don't want to marry me?
Oh, it isn't that, but... It's...
But what, Steve?
Well, why should you marry a no-good bum like me?
Well, why not? I'll take a chance. Steve Brody did.
Then you really mean that we should tie the knot?
Well, you big dope. Do I have to draw a diagram?
Daisy.
Oh, gee, Steve. I'm so happy.
Me too. Oh, honey. Everything's going to be great.
Oh, sure it is.
I'll get back on my feet again and I'll make money. Lots of it. I'll do big things. Hey, Daisy. Do you know what I'm going to do?
What, Steve?
I'm going to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
And so down rings the final curtain on The Good Old Days, starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Brody. Next week, Frontline Theater will present another radio play. And each week thereafter, you will hear radio versions of the best comedies, romances, dramas, and musicals with your favorite stars in the leading roles. If you have any special play you want to hear, just drop a line to Frontline Theater, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA.
The Frontline Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, a 1940s broadcast from the Armed Forces Radio Service. It's an hour of true history, on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now the story of the English charter known as Magna Carta, which was signed in 1215 and the first document that forced an English king by his group of subjects to limit his powers and protect their privileges. We'll hear much more about what the document meant in this dramatization as if CBS Radio News was there covering it. This first heard on January 18, 1948 on CBS with Real Newsman John Daly and Don Hollenbeck.
This is John Daly at Runnymede, England. The hour has come and gone on this 19th day of June, 1215. The hour when King John agreed to sign the Magna Carta. But the king has still not left Windsor Castle, 7 miles away from these council meadows on the Thames, and the patience of the barons gathered here at Runnymede is at the breaking point. After 3 days of haggling with the king's emissaries, the 49 articles of the Magna Carta still remain the barons' unconditional peace terms to end the civil war which has been raging up and down this English isle for more than a year. If John does not arrive, and at that shortly, there is the strongest possibility that the barons will take to the sword once again, march on...
Runnymede, June the 19th, 1215. You are there.
Now, the barons and their forces have been waiting. More and more gaily colored pavilions rise over these meadows to quarter this host. Here at Runnymede stands the bulk of the might and power of England. 300 barons or more are here, with at least 2,000 knights in full armor. With their host of retainers, yeomen, and other fighting men, they constitute the greatest striking force ever assembled on English soil. Spears, pikes, battle axes, swords, crossbows, burnished helmets and armor, a gleaming sea of deadly metal in the springtime sun. The leader of the barons, my Lord Robert Fitzwalter, is with us now at our CBS microphone. He wears linked chain armor under a white surcoat. His squire stands a short distance away, a few feet from us, holding his helmet, his sword, and his shield. My lord, do you think King John means to break his word and not sign the charter?
What King John means to do, I know not. He has shown bad faith before, he may show bad faith again.
And exactly what will you do, sir, if King John does not appear to sign the charter?
I have said it before, and I will say it again. We will march on Windsor Castle and tear it down, stone by stone, on his stubborn head.
But, my lord, suppose this meeting here at Runnymede is a ruse, a trap set for you by King John. What if instead of arriving peacefully, sir, his forces come charging onto this field hoping to take you by surprise?
That is a possibility. But if John Soft Sword chooses that manner of talking peace, you'll find us quite ready to answer in kind.
My Lord Fitzwalter, many observers think that King John will never accept Article 49 of the Charter.
Sir, we are beyond the point of being concerned with what King John thinks of any particular article in the Charter. We've haggled about it quite enough. It stands as it is. He signs today. And that before the shadows of our swords grow much longer, or mayhap England will be without her king.
And if it comes to such a crisis, sir, do you think the people of England will stand in back of you?
The people? What mean you by the people?
Why, the common folk, my Lord Fitzwalter, the multitude gathered over there along the fringes of the meadows.
Ah, yes, the people. I presume they stand behind us, but I fail to see in what manner they are concerned.
But does not the charter talk of the rights of all free men, my lord?
Free men, yes. But free men are people. Free men are free men. Nobles, knights, lords, not serfs, yeomanry.
But if the people do not stand to profit by the Magna Carta, my lord,
if
then can we not...
Will forgive me, I have weightier matters on my mind at this moment.
Thank you, my lord Fitzwalter. The leader of the barons is walking away now, back to his lieutenants who are gathered before Fitzwalter's pavilion. My colleague Don Hollenbeck in his CBS mobile unit has reached Windsor Castle and should be set up to report soon. Meanwhile, here at Runnymede, we're at the south end of the meadow. We can see the whole of the council field spread out before us. To the north, about 6 long acres away, is the road from Windsor. To our left, the meadow is flanked by the Thames. And directly in the center of the field, underneath a canopy draped in the royal pennants, is a large council table. To our right are huge crowds, masses of people, who have come from one end of England to the other to witness what may happen today. These are the people. The very people who loom not very large in the mind of the leader of the barons, Lord Fitzwalter. Ken Roberts is among them with a CBS microphone, and it might be interesting to hear what their thoughts are. So over to Ken Roberts.
This great crowd of people have been gathering for days from all over England. Some have come on foot, some in donkey carts, some even down the Thames on boats. Many have slept in the open fields, bringing their provisions with them. There are men, women, and children, entire households. Here, for example, is one member of this crowd, a man dressed in a light tan tunic made from flaxen cloth. Friend, what part of the island are you from?
I come from Northumberland.
Northumberland, eh?
Aye.
Well, that's quite a distance to travel, isn't it?
Aye. Goodly journey. 3 days on my way, I was.
You must be very interested in the peace conference to have made such a long journey.
I would know what will be.
What will happen to your crops while you're away?
No crops have I this year.
You mean you haven't planted at all?
Nay, not a seed.
Well, why not?
I will not say.
Could it be that your last year's wheat was seized by the king's bailiffs?
I will not say.
Or perhaps the baron steward seized your barley?
Nay, it was milk. But I will not say.
I see. And which side would you like to see win out today, the barons or the king?
I will not say. I would have peace. Not the seed will I plant till there be peace. Enough of strife, say I. Enough of barons and kings stealing poor man's crop, say I. I will not say. I'm come from Northumberland and I would have peace.
Of course. What do you think of the Magna Carta?
I will not say. No read nor write can I, nor trust I things on parchment. I will not say. I'm come from Northumberland and I would have peace.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's another man. What is your name, sir?
His name is Peter Warbeck, and I'm his good wife, Cecilia.
His good wife, Cecilia, yes. And you're both citizens of...
Dublin is where he's from, and I'm from Dublin. Cloth merchants is what we be, and no finer cloth than Warbeck cloth is sold nor made.
What, sir, are your hopes for the outcome of this peace conference today?
Hopes to be sure. Tell the man, Peter. Tell him how you sell your cloth to barons and kings.
Well, I sell my cloth
to the finest woolens, and mind you, no finer woolens than Hoarbeck woolens are sold or made.
No.
Tell him how not a coin have you been paid by king nor baron since this war began. We hope many may both lay down their arms and open their purses, or there'll be no Hoarbeck cloth for England anymore. We shall be ruined.
I shall be ruined.
Sir, would you like to see the Magna Carta signed?
It's a good contract for the barons to be here, and it has our blessings, which will mean the end of the war and the payment of our debts, we hope.
We hope.
Thank you. Thank you for a very informative interview, Master Hobbit.
Hoarbeck is the name. Thank the man, Peter. Have you lost your tongue?
And here is another man. He's wearing a long black tunic with slashed pockets and draped sleeves. By his garb, I'd say he's a scholar. Is that right, sir?
Aye. Like young Master Hobbit, we know all the answers. But who lends us ear?
Why, then, this is your opportunity. You have the ear of the world. Speak, sir scholar.
Of what shall I speak?
Well, speak of King John.
Oh, yes. Speak of the devil. Well... A bald pate is soon shaven, and our good king will be well barbered today. The barons will see to that. But there'll be other tyrants who will contest man's right to determine his own destiny. They may even be victorious in dimming the glow of freedom, but extinguish it never.
Then you think the Magna Carta means freedom?
Freedom? For whom?
Why, for the people, of course.
Sir, thou art a crack pate. Freedom for the barons and only for the barons. The people will still remain under the power of their overlords. The people will still have no will but the will of their master. But in time, the barons may find their power checked, as they contest the power of their king today. That would be a goodly jest. To fashion a harness for the king and find themselves checked and bridled with the people snapping the whip.
Our good scholar seems vastly amused by his own wit and wisdom. While we were talking, however, a message was handed to me. The Cardinal Subdeacon Pandolf, the Pope's emissary to the court of King John, has just arrived at Windsor Castle. So over to Don Hollenbeck.
You can probably hear the chains as the drawbridge goes up from the moat following the admittance of Cardinal Pandolf. The Pope's emissary arrived just 2 minutes ago, and with him came the seven bishops of England. What that means is anybody's guess. There must be 1,000 of the king's loyal men here. And at the microphone with me now, across the moat from the castle, is Lord Fitzrogers. He's a spokesman for the king, a loyal nobleman. He's been very close to the king's council for many years. He wears link chain armor. His squire stands by, holding his helmet and sword, that long two-handed sword that King John's brother, Richard the Lionhearted, wielded so famously in the Holy Land Crusades and on the continent. My Lord Fitzrogers, does Cardinal Pandolf's arrival here at Windsor Castle today mean that His Holiness has thrown his support behind King John?
Well, it would pleasure me greatly, good sir, to answer your question, but in truth, I know no more than you do. I am not privy to the king's council.
Well, all right, then. Do you think the king is going to sign the Magna Carta?
The king has promised to sign. But if I may speak frankly, I fear the consequences of that signing.
What do you mean by that, my lord? A lot of people believe it's for the good of England.
Perhaps. Perhaps. But then again, perhaps not, young sir. You see, in the historical development of a folkland, there are times when unity should be cherished more than feudal liberty. The barons have been fighting each other for a long time, storming each other's castles, robbing each other's lands, impoverishing England, weakening her strength. John is ambitious for England, not for himself.
But, my Lord Fitzrogers, the barons made the point that they would have England a strong and united power, a power to be feared on the continent.
On the contrary, young sir. If the Magna Carta is signed, England will have a multitude of rulers instead of one. And as the Holy Book says, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. For we shall be a prey to every marauding power on the continent.
No, young sir, it is a fine point, you will agree.
This Magna Carta of which you speak may be a good thing for the barons, but is it a good thing for England? Is it a good thing for England?
Thank you, my Lord Fitzrogers. Well, certainly in all the 49 years King John Lackland has lived, in all the 16 years he sat on the throne of England, he has never faced a more crucial moment than this. No one can say if he'll return from Runnymede with his crown. The drawbridge is coming down now. On this side of the moat, yeomen, crossbowmen, and foot soldiers are springing to attention. Knights and nobles are being helped on their horses by their retainers. That lower drawbridge must signal King John's appearance. It looks as if this army is going to march. The drawbridge is down, and now the royal standard bearers are coming across. They're turning left. That's the direction of the Council Meadows. And there's John, the King of England, astride a big black charger. The king wears a white surcoat over his armor. There's the red knight Templar cross embroidered across his chest, even though King John Lackland has never ventured on a crusade to the Holy Land. There's Langdon, the Archbishop of Canterbury, riding to the right of the king. The king is flanked on his left by William the Marshal, the commander of his forces. There's Cardinal Pandolf, the Pope's emissary, next in order, and after him, the seven bishops of England. At last, King John is off to Runnymede. We're going to move up with the king's forces, but now, John Daly, at Runnymede, you've heard the news. What's the reaction in the barons' camp?
The news that King John is on his way has stirred up a flurry of heightened activity here at the barons' camp, everywhere on this meadow. Knights in their heavy armor are being helped onto their horses by their retainers, and the crossbowmen, many of them, are fitting their deadly bolts into their powerful weapons. I can see my Lord Fitzwalter. He's mounted now and flanked by his close lieutenant. Eustace DeVacy has just handed Fitzwalter a scroll, and no doubt it's the Magna Carta. Fitzwalter rubs the scroll back and forth across his chin while fondling the great sword that's hanging by his side with his other hand. It's an eloquent gesture not lost upon his lieutenants either. The Magna Carta or the sword. It's going to take some time for King John to cover the 7 miles from Windsor to Runnymede. So while he's on his way, let's switch to our headquarters pavilion for Quincy Howe and an analysis of the Magna Carta.
I hold a copy of the Magna Carta in my hand. Article 49 states specifically that the baron shall have the right to elect 25 nobles from among themselves to administer the new laws contained in the other 48 articles of that charter. This is remarkable. If the law forces the king to share his power, what becomes of the divine right of kings? What's more, this revolutionary document, the Magna Carta, demands security that the laws and freedoms it contains shall be guaranteed and fulfilled. I quote from Article 49. If the king, or any of his justiciaries or bailiffs, or any of his ministers, shall break those articles of peace and security, and if the king shall not amend it within a reasonable time, the whole community of the land shall distrain and distress the king by all the means which they can. That is to say, and I'm still quoting from Article 49 of the Magna Carta, by taking his castles, lands, possessions, and in every other manner which they can, until amendment of the wrong shall be made. End of quote. Now this has no precedent. Will King John sign this Magna Carta? Will he peacefully give up the traditional prerogatives of a monarch accountable only to God for his actions? No one yet knows, but we're soon going to find out. And now, back to the baron's camp on the meadows and John Daly.
Don Hollenbeck is on his way over here from Windsor with King John, accompanying King John and his troops. And he tells us that the king and his men have halted about 1/2 mile from here.
Right, John. The king's forces have stopped at the river bend so that the foot soldiers can catch up with the mounted knights. The king seems to be very anxious to have his full force compactly behind him when he gets to the meadow.
I see. Well, would you say
the
then...
The foot soldiers are coming up now, John. They're approaching, but... Why, they're fanning out into the fields on either side of the road. It looks as if...
Well, go ahead. It looks as if what, Don? We're not getting you, Don. Come on in. What's wrong?
Why, there's nothing wrong, John. I was merely about to remark that it looks to us here as if England this spring is lovelier than it's ever been before. And what could be lovelier than England in the spring? Do you agree, John?
Yes, of course. I suppose it's censorship, Don, but as my Lord Fitzwalter said, the barons are ready for anything, and if it means that the king intends to charge, the barons will be ready. Crowds of spectators massed at the east end of the field know that King John is headed this way, and they've moved back, way back. They're still pushing and shoving to get out of the way of any possible action. There's a thick cloud of dust in the distance over the road from Windsor Castle, and I can make out a body of horsemen advancing down the road, coming close to this meadow. It's King John with a packed mass of knights and nobles. They're riding forward at a slow counter, or rather slow canter, and the foot soldiers in the fields on either side of the road are keeping pace with that canter. King John and his retinue have halted now. They've pulled up their horses on the extreme northern fringe of this meadow, and as if by a signal, the foot soldiers have stopped dead in their tracks. The king and his close party are still making no move to come forward. They're seated upon their horses, just looking in silence at the huge force of barons across the meadow, sort of sizing up the situation. And it's strange now how quiet everything is getting, almost a deadly quiet. It's like a still painting, a tremendous canvas with John seated upon his horse, the dead center of the picture. Even the great crowd that fringes this meadow is not moving very much, and they've quieted down a good deal. Here at the south end of the meadow, the mounted knights and the barons are watching and waiting. There's nothing but a deep, sullen silence among them. There's the first move. The first move in this fantastic game of chess being played here at Runnymede Meadows. John and his close party have dismounted. They're walking to the council table in the center of the meadows, and I'm going to move up to that table as fast as I can. Meanwhile, perhaps Don Hollenbeck can come in without censorship again, since the king is evidently going to talk and not fight.
I can this time, John. They did cut us off while the king's forces charged up to the meadows. It was difficult to understand that maneuver. It might have been a bluff to frighten the barons, a bluff backed by force, but it certainly did not succeed. Lord Fitzwalter and his lieutenants in the barons' camp have dismounted now. They're walking forward to meet John and his party. Fitzwalter's flanked by Richard, that's the Earl of Clare. There's Geoffrey, Earl of Essex and Gloucester. King John's at the council table now, the king's in the center. Stephen Langdon, Archbishop of Canterbury's on his right, and William the Marshal, the Earl of Pembroke's on his left, and behind them, there's Cardinal Pandulf and the seven bishops. Well, I see the barons have reached the council table now, and so has John Daly, so over to him.
The barons are waiting for King John to make the first move, and the king's face as he looks at Lord Robert Fitzwalter is absolutely expressionless. The king has turned to Archbishop Langdon, and that is the king's voice now, commanding the archbishop to open the conversation.
This matter done with.
My sons, I greet ye in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. I pray for the peace of this realm and the salvation of our souls. God grant us wisdom and good counsel in the grave matters before us. Amen. My Lord Fitzwalter, the king is ready to affix his royal seal to the charter, provided all of you first swear fealty and declare yourself his liegemen.
Most venerable father, we, the knights and nobles of England, in solemn assembly, swore upon the high altar of St. Edmundsbury that we are no longer liegemen of John Plantagenet, and we would hold ourselves so till he should, by this charter, confirm to us and our heirs all that we demand. The king's royal seal first, then our oath of allegiance.
Ah, my sons, I beseech ye. Hath there not been enough of strife and bloodshed?
His royal seal first.
The archbishop has turned to the king, appealing to him, both arms outstretched, but the king himself has moved forward and is about to speak.
My lord marshal, give them the document which I have caused to be drawn up. Give it to them, and let us be gone.
One moment, if it please you, sire. This document of yours, does it contain the 49 points of law we petition for?
48. And in truth, if I love not peace, never would I have consented to accept even these 48 outrageous demands.
Sire, these 48 laws which you so graciously grant us are quite worthless without surety that they will be administered in good faith.
Surety! Surety! Ye dare ask for surety. Is not the word of your king sufficient surety?
Sire, this is the document we wish you to seal. This is our Magna Carta. Your royal seal, sire.
Hearken to me, my lords. My noble lords. I, John, by the grace of God, King of England, am accountable to our Lord in heaven only, and to his holy servant in Rome, Innocent the Third. I am the king. I make the law. You ask that we grant the church freedom from state power. We grant that. You ask that we restrain our bailiffs from seizure of land for debts. Grant it. You ask that no free men be put to death for petty crimes. Grant it. You ask that free men be tried by an elected jury. Grant it. These and all the divers laws to the number of 48. Grant it, grant it, grant it. But when you ask, nay, demand, the administration of these laws be placed in the hands of 25 barons, I say not granted. Not granted. Why don't you ask for my throne? Why don't you ask for my crown? By the saints, I or no one else administers the law in this realm. Never will I grant liberties that will make of me a slave. I am the king. I make the law.
King John has turned his back upon the barons, he motions to Cardinal Pandulf, and the Pope's emissary comes forward, his long red robes trailing the ground. Taking a scroll from beneath his red robe, he unrolls it and has begun to read from it.
Servus Savorum Dei, Universis Christi Fidelibus Hanc Paginam Inscriptio.
Cardinal Pandulf is reading Latin, and here is Quincy Howe.
An official translation of the letter that Cardinal Pandulf is reading has been handed to me. It's a message from the Pope addressed to the barons. The message accuses the barons of persecuting the king. It refers to the Magna Carta as vile, base, unlawful, unjust, induced by violence. And finally, it threatens both the king and the barons with excommunication if the barons compel King John to sign the charter, especially Article 49.
Interrupting at the threat of excommunication, Lord Fitzwalter defies the king. The barons' forces are moving forward. 2,000 armed knights moving up for battle. The Archbishop of Canterbury now is pleading with King John to sign. The king's face is contorted with fear and anger. He stands behind the council table staring at the oncoming knights who are no more than... King John has spoken to William the Marshal. The Marshal is handing him a seal. It's the royal seal. He holds it up. The king holds it up and has cried, "Behold our seal!" And now Fitzwalter has motioned his forces to halt.
"Behold our seal! With its own weight, it kills our majesty. For by this act, I uncrown your king. I give you 25 tyrants in my stead."
King John has sealed the Magna Carta. All 49 articles are law. Robert Fitzwalter is holding the Magna Carta over his head, waving it at his troops. The knights have broken into wild and jubilant cheering. The people on the edge...
June the 19th, 1215. King John signs the Magna Carta at Runnymede, and a new age of freedom begins.
You Are There, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 18th, 1948 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.